If you notice the title on your outline, the title of this morning's sermon is Being Missional. That word is very loosely used amongst a wide range of churches and believers, from really conservative evangelicals to really liberal Christians. And so I want to clear up what I mean at the start when I am using that title, missional. It's intentional this morning, but being missional, and I did a lot of time studying just on this word this week and trying to figure out how I can define it clearly for you. Being missional means being driven by God's mission in life. And that's as opposed to driving God's mission. And that's where people, I think, kind of get confused by this word. We can use this word as, I'm missional. In other words, I'm driving God's mission. I'm pushing it out there. I'm going and doing this. But really, it's just this idea of having a bigger picture of living a gospel-centered life. Where being missional, you are being driven by God's mission. You're at the mercy of God's mission as a Jesus follower. You're a kingdom agent in a broken world. I love describing the Jesus follower's life this way, being missional. I'm just going to give you an example, and you might say that I'm biased for this example, but you know, I've had the privilege of working with our young adults here at this church, and one of the things I love is that I get to observe a lot of their interaction. For example, on social media, we have this Proclaim Facebook message that's used for all sorts of things. Silly little stickers that they post that are just funny, or little memes that they post that are funny. And I'm kind of infamous for the memes, I guess, because I'm an old guy. But what I love about this is I'm just a part of a group of like 50 or 60 young adults who are interacting as friends. I'm this old guy that's kind of like on the fringes, but I get to see them and the way that they live life together as a group of young adults. And I'm pointing because most of them sit over here. These guys live God's mission out in their lives. When someone needs prayer because of a crisis, I hear about it through a text message. So I go to Proclaim page to, you know, to say something. And there's already a prayer meeting set up where these people are gathering together to pray for whatever's going on. If somebody needs encouragement and they mention, hey guys, I need some encouragement, my family's going through this or that, they go and they flock to this person in mass to just spend time with these people and to encourage them and to lift them up, to cheer them up, just to be there for them. So there's prayer, there's encouragement. They go spend time together. They set up evangelism opportunities on that page. It's incredible to see our young adults living out God's mission in life. And I just get to watch them invite each other. I don't do anything. Now, you guys might think Mark leads this ministry, but I'm just kind of on the bus for the ride because they're the ones that are doing this. And it's really incredible to watch you guys living out God's mission. I am incredibly blessed by that. This morning, we're going to ask this question, how do I live missionally? How do I do that? What do I do? How do I let God's mission drive the way that I live my life? Our text this morning is one of those texts that you read over and you think, oh man, this is just kind of a technical, like just details about Paul's journeying, that's easy to overlook. And I think it's exciting to study it because there's some really practical things we can get from this text. Might be a little technical, might have some details about how Paul's journeying and where he's going, but there are some really incredible points that we can pull that answer the question of how I can live missionally. How can Temecula Hills as a church live in this community missionally? And how can each one of us individually live missionally? This text is written in a chunk, and this is where it gets difficult. The chunk of text this morning is really, we're going through 16 verses. It's the first of three episodes in a two-chapter span, chapters 20 and 21 of the book of Acts. So it's a huge chunk that Luke is writing. He's talking about these three different episodes in these two chapters. We're going to talk about the first one this morning. So if you turn your attention to the map up here, I'm going to show you guys kind of where we're going to be journeying, because it's actually quite a bit of time in these 16 verses. Right where Nathanael left off, we're in Ephesus. And if you can see Ephesus, it's kind of right in the middle of Asia there, the green part of the map. So these guys are going to travel up to Troas, sail across the sea into Macedonia, and Paul's going to hang out in Macedonia. He's going to go down to Greece, or it's called Achaia on this map. He's going to hang out in Corinth for a few months, and then he's going to go back up through Macedonia. He's going to cross the sea back to Troas. He's going to spend some time there, and he's going to sail down towards Syria or Jerusalem. We're going to be traveling with Paul, and so the beginning of this text, the first several verses, is just travel plans. What is Paul doing? Where is he going? Why is he going there? Then we're going to have a really incredible meeting place and time with the church that's in Troas. And then there's going to be more travel plans at the end. And in traveling with Paul, we're going to see three clear ways that we can be missional. We get a picture, a window into Paul's heart behind the mission. This is his third missionary journey. We get a heart behind why Paul does what he does. And it's really applicable for how we should live our lives. When we left off, Paul and his companions were in Ephesus, like I said, and there was this uproar. The blacksmiths and the tradesmen who really profited from idol worship through what they made. They made a lot of money in their small businesses. The gospel was spreading so much in Ephesus. Jesus was changing so many lives through the ministry of Paul that these people's business was plummeting. So they get angry, they get upset, they drag Paul's companions into the theater to put them on trial, and that's where we left off. And now we're in chapter 20, verse 1 of the book of Acts. So if you haven't gotten there yet, turn to Acts chapter 20. We're going to read verse 1 together. It says this, "After the uproar ceased, Paul sent for the disciples. And after encouraging them, he said farewell and he departed for Macedonia." So, surprisingly, this uproar in Ephesus brought the disciples out fairly unscathed. Okay, they went in, there was a pretty crazy little uproar that lasted, like if you were here last week, Nathanael said it was a pretty long trial and fight. And so Paul waited. He was trying to get in, the disciples prevented him, he's waiting. They're safe, so the uproar ceased. So Paul met with the disciples in Ephesus and he encouraged them. And that's an important word that we're going to see again in this passage. Paul cares about that. He wants to make sure that the believers in Ephesus are safe, that they're okay. Not that maybe they're not physically harmed, but that they're taken care of spiritually. He wants to encourage them. And he leaves quickly so that he would avoid some legal action so that he can continue to encourage churches throughout Macedonia, which we'll get to. But if you notice, Paul's emphasis is on people, which is the first point in your outline. People matter. People matter in mission. If you want to live a life driven by God's mission, then people have to matter. We saw it here in verse 1 when Paul waits so that he can encourage the church. Then now look with me in verse 2. We'll see it some more. "When he had gone through those regions of Macedonia, he gave much encouragement, and then he came to Greece." Verse 3. "There he spent 3 months, and when a plot was made against him by the Jews as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia." A lot of these words are weird and hard. I'm going to do my best in these names and cities. "So Peter, the Berean, son of Purrus, accompanied him. And of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe and Timothy, and the Asians, Tychicus and Trophimus. I would not like to have one of these names. I'm just saying. These went on ahead, and they were waiting for us at Troas. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days we came to them at Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. Okay? Now, there's a lot of detail here, but why does this show that people matter in Paul's ministry? Well, notice Paul's mission focus here. It's people. He went from region to region in Macedonia, encouraging the churches. Now, let me tell you, go back a slide. I know this wasn't planned, but I want to show the map again. If you can, go back to the first one. Okay, if you think about this, Paul is in Ephesus. His goal is to go down here. He wants to get to Jerusalem to give this offering to the Jerusalem church to help them. They're in trouble. They need help financially. But he goes in the opposite direction to escape legal action, to escape this plot that the Jews have against him. So he goes to Macedonia. And we're going to see later the importance of our plans and how those plans work out. But what the overriding theme for Paul is people. Okay, his plans change. He goes to Macedonia. But what does Paul do? He takes advantage of the time he has there. This phrase in verse 2, it's an important one in getting a behind-the-scenes look at Paul. Encouragement is preaching, like we do on Sunday mornings. Encouragement is hanging out, like we do as a family. Maybe you go and have dinner with some other church family members, or you have lunch after church today. Paul is doing this for this travel time. He is stopping at church at Philippi, at Thessalonica. He's stopping at these places for the purpose of encouraging his people. And then another important thing about this passage, 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and Romans 15 suggest that Paul, and you can't see it on this map, but he goes into Illyricum and he practices his Latin preaching for his mission to Spain. That we know he's on his way to Rome, then to Spain after he drops off this tithe to the Jerusalem church. He's going to go to Rome, then he wants to travel to Spain to share the gospel with people who have never heard it. And so he goes and he practices his Latin preaching with a church that's close by here. Again, people matter. Paul wants to make sure he can clearly communicate the life-giving message of Jesus to people in Latin. And then you have this list of men that we see. And scholarship widely agrees that these are representatives of the churches throughout these regions. And let me just share some of the regions. We have Berea, we saw Thessalonica, the Galatian region and churches. You see Galatia is in pink up there. The Asian churches, the Macedonian churches, and the Greek churches, or those that are in Achaia. And there's a few places not listed on here, Philippi and Corinth specifically. But this group of guys that are a representative of those churches join Paul. And all these people, they represent the offering that Paul is bringing to the Jerusalem church. Again, Paul operates on people. Paul uses people to accomplish this gospel mission in the world. He partners with people. He encourages people. He serves with and he serves people. He helps people by taking this offering. He is determined to help his brothers and sisters in Jerusalem. That's why he's so determined to get to Syria. You know, I've heard it said in my Christian life quite a bit, church is awesome until people get involved. Or ministry is awesome until people get involved. I've heard that so many times. And I have to be honest with you, when I read Paul's determination here to encourage, to help people, regardless of his safety, regardless of what happens to him, although that we can mess things up as people aren't perfect, I really don't agree with that statement. I don't think that ministry or church would be church without people. You have to have people. God chose, and I don't know why, crazy plan God had. But he chose people to impact people. He chose people to share the gospel with other people. We can't live missionally without people, without one another. It's not possible. Paul wouldn't be able to function on his own. And so when I think about this, I don't put myself in the minister's shoes. How can I get people to be encouraged by my leadership? I don't think that way. Here's how I think. And here's how I would encourage you to think. When people are ministering to me, I ask myself, am I teachable? I ask myself, am I making this person's life of living out God's mission easier or harder through my attitude, through my actions, through my judgments, through my criticisms? I was having lunch with a really close friend and mentor, and me and Nathaniel and a close friend and mentor of ours the other day, and we were talking about some of the political stuff that's going on, and there's some pretty heavy stuff happening in our country. And, you know, he just said, you know, these things are important, yeah, but why aren't we focused on the fact that we don't treat each other very well in the church? That he said this, that confuses me. With, yeah, these things are important, and we need to work on those things, and we need to minister to people in those areas. But, man, if we're dysfunctional in church with each other, how can we possibly affect those people? And that kind of blew my mind. And that reminds me of Paul's mission here. If he is dysfunctional with people, he cannot minister effectively. We need to understand that we matter to one another. And we should put ourselves in this situation where we're asking ourselves if we are helping other people live out missionally successfully. Live out mission successfully. Are we doing that? You know, Paul, he did it in such an extreme way that, man, it would be, that's kind of what our aim should be. I'm convicted every time I read passages like you're going to see up on the screen. It's two slides over. Philippians chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Imagine being able to say this. Even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and I rejoice with you. Likewise, you should also be glad and rejoice with me. Let me explain what's going on here. Paul is in prison, and he's saying, my imprisonment and my suffering is, if it's benefiting you, I rejoice. If my suffering benefits your faith, I rejoice. That's pretty insane for me to think about. Paul welcomes suffering if it's for the benefit of those people that he's ministering to. He welcomes it. I can't tell you guys that I put other people ahead of my own comfort. I struggle with that. It's a struggle to understand living out mission the way that Paul does. But we need to. We're called to. So my question for you is, are people a priority in your life? Do people matter to you more than anything else when you're living out God's mission? We need to serve one another. Put other people first. Paul says earlier in this chapter, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others as more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interest of others. It's what Phil read earlier. What I find fascinating about this passage in Philippians is that there's no conditions that Paul puts on this encouragement to put other people ahead of yourself. So, for example, if you feel like you've been wronged by somebody and that's a justifiable, you know, act against you, you have reasons to be upset. Maybe you were gossiped about, maybe you were slandered, Maybe somebody said something to your face that was really hurtful. Paul doesn't put conditions like that on this. It doesn't matter. Your feelings should come second. That person should come first. A lot of times we forget that other people are wounded puppies just like we are. It doesn't matter how wrong somebody's actions are against us. Multiply those things 100, 1,000-fold, and that was your rebellion against God. And we can't forgive and love and put the importance of somebody else above our own needs because they said something that we didn't like. We have a responsibility to give the grace and the forgiveness that God has given us to others. Paul puts people first in this chapter in Acts. He encourages the churches as he's being pursued to be killed. And we're going to see that several times in this chapter. People want him gone. But he is still doing ministry and investing in other people, putting their needs first. It's easy to prioritize what we believe. It's easy to say, I'm a Jesus follower and I believe that the resurrection happened and this is wrong and this is wrong and you can't live that way and this is what the Bible says. And when we do that, a lot of times we kind of overlook people. That stuff's still true. The resurrection, doctrine, theology is extremely important. It's the foundation that we need to build on. But if we are not prioritizing people, that foundation is cracked and broken, and it will crumble. Because our theology should dictate how we treat people, especially two groups, each other, other Jesus followers, and the broken and lost world that need to hear about Jesus. In order to live out mission, to be missional, we must prioritize people. People matter. Next point on your outline, we'll see it in verses 7 through 12. Commitment is vital. Commitment is vital. Look in verse 7 with me. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them, intending to depart on the next day, and he prolonged his speech until midnight. Don't worry, my message is not that long. There were many lamps in the upper room where we were gathered, and a young man named Eutychus, sitting at the window, sank into a deep sleep as Paul talked, still longer. So just so you know, Luke wants us to know that Paul was preaching for a long amount of time, and it wasn't exciting. Okay? And being overcome by sleep, he fell down from the third story and was taken up dead. I'm just going to tell you right now, if any of you fall asleep and pass away, I'm not like Paul, we're going to see here, I can't revive you. So don't do that. Let's keep reading. But Paul went down and he bent over him, and taking him into his arms, he said, "Do not be alarmed, for there is life in him." And when Paul had gone up and had broken bread and eaten, he conversed with them a long while until daybreak, and so he departed. And they took the youth away alive, and they were not a little comforted. Now there's a lot here. A lot of content here. But why do I say commitment is vital? We're going to get to three things that we need to be committed to. And I think this passage pretty clearly tells us things that the Jesus follower has to be committed to in order to live out mission. First thing we need to know is that mission, that this gathering isn't a special gathering because Paul's in town. This is the weekly gathering that takes place every single week. Paul prolonged it because his travel plans were accommodating to his teaching. It's like, well, I'm leaving in the morning, so let's just hang out and eat and talk about Jesus until daybreak when I'm gone. And we're good. So Paul prolonged a weekly meeting that they have. So they gathered each Sunday. They broke bread to remember Jesus. They talked about the gospel over dinner. And then they finished their dinner by breaking bread again and remembering Jesus. This is one of the greatest things about the Christian life, in my opinion. It's the community. I love how they celebrated the Lord's Supper together. It was a real dinner. They broke bread together. They ate together. They encouraged one another. And this encouragement during dinner could go from preaching monologically like we do on Sunday mornings to instructional time like you would find in a classroom, to a dialogue that you'd find elsewhere, maybe over dinner, where you're talking about something important. And the group would carry on a discussion together. I'd love that. In fact, that's the first thing we need to be committed to. Church family. Commitment is vital to your church family. These people, they didn't question their attendance at these things. And to be honest, I think Paul would be confused if he spent the night at your house. He was a dinner guest and he decided to crash on your couch. He woke up on Sunday morning and, man, you guys were up till midnight or 1 a.m. and you're just done. You're like, you know what, Paul, I think let's just skip church today. He'd be like, what? He would think that's insane. Because he does not divorce the Christian life from the Christian community. I mean, think about this map and all this traveling he does. He stops and he joins the local gathering with these people in Troas. Because church family is that vital and it's that important. Yeah, he's got to be on a boat early in the morning, but he doesn't care. Commitment to church family is important. And this is a mentality. I understand that there are times in our culture where missing church is, it just happens. I get that. I'm not telling you if you miss church, I'm never going to talk to you again. I won't even look at you when you come in the door. That guy missed church. Ooh. That won't happen. I get it that there are good reasons why we can't be here some Sunday mornings. I've missed Sunday mornings. It's a mentality, though. When you miss, are you here with your family, for example? Praying for how God's going to speak through the speaker that morning. Praying for the worship time. Are you here with your church family even when you're gone? So it's more of a mentality. Your commitment is to this family. Next, I want you to notice in this passage the amount of time that Paul speaks. And it's not an accident that Luke is emphasizing the length of teaching here. There's two reasons why he does. This kid comes up, this kid dies because of it. But also, there's a commitment to it. That's the second thing. There's a commitment to God's Word that we see in this gathering. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't know. When I preach over 40 minutes, I'm talked to. I'm spoken to. Slightly reprimanded. We have children's ministry going on. The teachers are like, oh gosh, Mark, you're talking and talking and talking. I mean, imagine like a 6 or an 8 hour sermon. In the evening. Until dawn. I mean, I would probably be Eutychus. I'd fall asleep. It's just insane to see this, but the commitment to God's Word is so clear in this text. God's Word's the center of this. And the death of Jesus, the gospel-centered teaching, Paul wrote Romans just before this meeting. And that is gospel-centric, that book. So imagine all this stuff is weighing on Paul's mind. He's excited to go to Spain and preach the gospel. He's probably instructing very similarly to the book of Romans, which is gospel, gospel, gospel. There's such an intense focus on it. It's what propelled them into their mission each week. It's why church family and God's word are so vital. A blacksmith, a tent maker, a farmer, they left those meetings knowing that the gospel was going to propel them into their daily life. It was going to pour out of their lives. It was going to transform them. It was going to transform the people around them, because the gospel is powerful, and Paul knows it. That's why they spend so much time in God's word. So real quickly, let's talk about the white elephant in the room, the kid that dies and gets resurrected. Okay? A couple things about this. This kid, the description is that he could not control his sleep. He was so exhausted. It took control of him. And when he fell, the text is clear. He was taken up dead. He died, dead, gone. So when Paul fell on him and said there is life yet in him, he's not saying, oh, he's still breathing. He's not saying, oh, his heart's still beating. He's saying he was dead, and I have a prophetic vision from God that he will live. God will put life in him. And the astounding thing here is the reaction of these people. Do you see them say, oh no, what do we do? Do you see them freaking out because their kid's dead? No, when Paul jumps on them, they trust God to do an incredible work. And that's the third area of commitment. We need to be committed to trusting in God. You know, life happens. Bad things happen to us. Death, divorce, sickness, getting fired. Stuff happens. We have to stay committed as Jesus followers to trusting God. We have to. And I think when we decide to say, God, I don't trust you right now, we're putting him in this little box and setting him aside. And incredible things don't happen because we put him in a little box and set him aside. But when we commit to trusting him, incredible things happen. Like this resurrection, this incredible miracle that takes place. And these people are committed to trusting. Paul says, don't worry. So they trust God and God's messenger, Paul. And what do? What does the story tell us they do? They go back up into the upper room and they eat more. And they listen to Paul teach more. While their kid, who just died, is laying in the room next to them, trusting that this kid's going to wake up. And an incredible thing happens. They took the youth up alive and they went away not a little comforted. Now that last phrase is important. It's like a kind of like a positive negative. Luke is emphasizing the joy through kind of a negative statement. They were not a little comforted because of how much joy and comfort they had in trusting in God's plan. I want to trust God like this family, the family of Eutychus, does. I want to trust like that. It's hard. I think about my kids. I think about, what if God decided to take one? I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do. It would be an awful thing. But we need to be committed. It's vital to live out mission. If I reject God because one of my children passed away, everything that I've built my life on, that Jesus has done in my life, let's say, that Jesus has transformed and changed, is worthless to the lost. It's worthless. True trust in God is trusting Him even in the most difficult of circumstances, the most painful of circumstances. We look at God and say, you're still glorious, you're still beautiful because of the gospel. Because of what you've done through Jesus, your Son, you're still incredible, and I trust you. Last point on your outline. Plans are important, yet flexible. I'm going to override plans with people. And you'll see that as we go through this and end our sermon this morning. But read with me starting in verse 13. But going ahead to the ship, we set sail for Assos, intending to take Paul aboard there. So he had arranged, intending himself to go by land. And when he met us at Assos, we took him on board and we went to Mytilene. And sailing from there, we came the following day opposite Chios. The next day we touched at Samos, and the day after that we went to Miletus. For Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus so that he might not have to spend time in Asia, for he was hastening to be at Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. A lot of details we see here. So we saw the travel plans at the beginning, and now we have the travel plans here. He decides not to take a ship to Syria because of a plot that the Jews made against him. So probably what happened was there was Jews jumping on that same boat to Syria, and Paul heard that they were going to kill him while he was sailing in the middle of the ocean. So he's like, not doing that. So he went back through Macedonia like you saw earlier. And Paul's plans start coming together here, but there's changes that need to take place. We see earlier in the chapter that Paul has to flee a murder plot. Then we see him have to fly past Ephesus because he doesn't want to get stuck there. There's two reasons why. First reason is because of the legal trouble that's probably still sitting there waiting for him. Second reason is that's a church that he's poured a lot of time into. So being with believers that he loves would probably keep him there instructing and encouraging and loving on those people longer. So he says, we got to get to Jerusalem, so let's pass these guys. As we do church, quote unquote, and live driven by this mission from God to build God's kingdom on earth, we have to be strategic in how we do it. We have to make plans. Paul made plans. Paul was strategic in how he did things. That's why here we offer different ministries. We offer different things to do for different age groups. We have a ministry model. We have a plan in place for how to impact this community. But these plans have to be flexible because of people. They have to be flexible because of people. And so there's two questions I have. First, do I have a plan for sharing the gospel and ministering to the lost in the context of my own life? Do you have a plan, like Paul did, to share this life-changing message of Jesus with people? Do you have a plan to do that? Are you strategic about how to do that? For me, as a pastor and a Bible teacher, it's easy to bring up the gospel. Hey, what do you do? Oh, I'm a Bible teacher and a pastor. Oh, cool. Tell me about that. And I can tell them about the gospel. You can't, as an engineer, go into your office and say, hey, everybody, I want to tell you about Jesus. But there's conversations that can take place. There's relationships that can be built. There's time that can be poured into people so that you get to a point where you can share the gospel. Do you have that plan in place where you work? Where you eat at restaurants, where you get your coffee, where you get your groceries? Is there a plan for these people that are living life all around you? And do you adjust those plans as you get to know those people? Do you adjust those plans as you get to know those people? That's an important question to ask. And I want to conclude with a video this morning. It's a training video from Chick-fil-A, actually. And it's not what you think. It's not like, hey, save cows, woohoo. This video, I think, it points to an important aspect of what we learned this morning. I want you to consider, as you watch this clip, what is your mindset as you interact with people in this world? Or something like this, do I pay attention to those around me who desperately need the gospel? Take a look at this video. People matter. Our commitment to one another is vital. If we're not committed to each other, we won't notice that stuff. And plan to share the gospel with people around you. Learn about people. Understand where they come from. The gospel is for every person. Every single person needs to hear the gospel. Every single person that you saw up there needed to receive the gospel, to experience life beyond what they could hope for. And we need to have the right mindset when we go into ministering in our community. I think we're going to close with a song, so if the worship team can come up.